Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us this week. This week's podcast is brought to you by a new sponsor, AgroZen Life Sciences. Again, that's AgroZen Life Sciences. Go check them out on their website, AgroZen, AgroZen Life Sciences. On this week's podcast, we'll hear from Rod Kite. Rod is a cannabis business law attorney who lives in Asheville, North Carolina. He represents legal cannabis businesses throughout the country and is the author of Kite on Cannabis Law Blog, a very good blog for those interested in what's going on in the hemp industry. But first, we turn our attention to Justin Swanson. Justin is the Midwest Hemp Council president and vice president of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. Justin, how you doing this week? And thanks for being with us.
Anytime, Jason.
All right. And whenever we have Justin on, we always have some great news. Well, not always good news, but we always have a lot of news from Justin. So don't know whether it's going to be good or bad, but we'll go ahead and and get started. Now, there's some new market research, a new market research report out there that we need to talk about, Justin.
Yeah. So we wanted to alert everybody. The Hemp Industry Daily just released yesterday a great market research report on the craft hemp flower market across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go onto their website or, you know, kind of Google the article, and you just basically got to give them some information and your email address, and they'll send you the report. But cool. If you have any interest in the flower market, I really encourage everyone to take a look at it.
And where would they get this information? How do they access this?
You just go to the website, the Hemp Industry Daily website.
Hemp Industry Daily.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then they have these kind of market reports. I'm sure it's on the front page of the website right now.
Okay.
But yeah, you just need to fill out some information about yourself, and they'll send you the report in your email instantly. So.
Okay. Cool.
This is really the most in-depth market research I've seen on this market.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. Preview a little bit of that for us, for those who aren't able to get to it immediately.
So probably the biggest thing that stood out to me. Was the market size, the current and the projected. So the current market size right now, they're estimating is around $80 million a year.
Hmm.
And they're estimating that market to grow to between $300 and $400 million.
Now, did that surprise you?
Not me personally, because, over the last 2 years, the more and more I've learned about this sector of the market, I mean, there's just huge demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how states, handle this kind of the new development of a product, we always have to keep in mind it really doesn't do anything for demand. It just changes how the consumer gets access to the product.
Okay. In what way? Can you dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. So I'm alluding to, thanks. I'm alluding to, a lot of states around the country, and this is also taken up in the report. They're grappling with how to handle this new industry. And when I say that, the craft hemp flower market. So there's a lot of pushback from law enforcement because it looks and smells just like marijuana. And, you can't tell by sight alone whether it's hemp or marijuana. So there is some hesitation from law enforcement on how to handle that. Mm-hmm. And so you see some states who have fully embraced it and are encouraging, farmers and other horticultural growers to begin experimenting with this new market and get the best product out there. And then the other side of that coin, you have states like Indiana, Texas right now is going through it, Kentucky, and I think Louisiana, they've all criminalized smokable hemp. So it's interesting to see this develop. And then you have the other states in between that are just silent on it. And it's, there's no regulations, and it's just kind of a market that exists without a whole lot of clear guidelines on how to operate in it.
Justin, what else stood out for you in this report that we should know about?
So it was interesting. They looked at kind of where this product is in most demand across the country, and they found about 41% of the demand is coming from the southern states.
Hmm.
And then the rest, like 27%, I think off the top of my head, was from the western states. And then kind of the central part of the country is right behind them. So I thought that was interesting. I'm not sure what the connection is between the southern states.
What does that mean, though? What do you When you say demand, what does that, how does that break down, and what does that mean? That the people in the Midwest have no interest, or?
No, not at all. It's just that the highest demand is in the southern states. Mm-hmm. And I think if you read between the lines, I think if you're a tobacco consumer, you're something like 150 some percent, and that's off the top of my head, but it's around 100%, 150% more likely to consume a smokable hemp product. And so maybe, you know, it'd be interesting to look at the tobacco rates down there, and that might be why the demand is so high.
Do we see, and this is completely off topic from what you're saying, do we see people switching from tobacco to hemp?
No, it's not off topic at all, and the report actually addresses that.
Oh, okay.
And there is, you know, there is some signs that there are people who are, well, the report confirms that if you're using tobacco, you're much more likely to use smokable hemp product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not far out there to say at some point maybe they might transition fully over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, with the carcinogens and things like that, smokable hemp would be healthier. And again, we're not giving any medical advice, but you would think it would be healthier than a cigarette.
Yeah, you'd think so. And depending on the quality of your hemp flower and all that, obviously. And it's interesting too, knowing this, it's, you know, maybe one of the reasons states don't like this is a lot of them are dependent on the Master Tobacco Settlement Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the less sales of tobacco products you have, the less money goes into that fund.
Well, yeah, when you tax something that you want to limit, that does cause a problem, because as we know, any government, local, national, regional, whatever, any government is going to be dependent on whatever revenue they have come in, and they need to replace that revenue before they kill that revenue stream.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And that's why it's so important for reports like these and for our members and everyone listening to educate themselves on the market like this. And that way we can show the value, you know, instead of a diminishing tax revenue source, such as tobacco tax, because mm-hmm. in theory, like you said, you're hopefully going to be reducing that over time because less people are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually, you know, as I mentioned before, this is a market that's going to explode, at least projected estimates on the report, to $300 and $400 million market by 2025. So it's really important, again, that we take time to educate ourselves and consumers on the markets like this. And I just really encourage everyone to take a look at the report. It's great. Midwest Hemp Council actually took an ad out in the page or in the report. So I hope you see that ad as well. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, Jason.
Okay, Justin, and to top this off, once again, tell folks where they can get access to this report.
So if you go to the Hemp Industry Daily website, it'll be right there on there. It'll be on the website. Again, you just kind of click on it, put your information in, and they'll email you the report.
Fantastic. Anything else, Justin?
No, I just want to give a shout out to Rod for joining us today and mm-hmm. talking about Delta 8. I know it's a very hot topic. So I'm really interested to hear his thoughts.
Yep, we've got him coming up next and very excited about it. Hopefully we'll learn something.
All right, thanks, Jason.
All right, next we turn our attention to Rod Kite. Rod is a cannabis business law attorney from Asheville, North Carolina. He represents legal cannabis businesses throughout the country. He also is the author of Kite on Cannabis. It's a law blog. You should check it out. Rod, how you doing? And thanks for being on the program with us this week.
Well, I'm doing really well. I appreciate you having me. A lot of cool and not so cool, but certainly a lot of things happening in the industry right now that I'm looking forward to talking with you about.
And before we go any further, I just introduced your blog, Kite on Cannabis. Where can people find that law blog?
Sure. Probably the easiest way is kiteoncannabis.com. And the only strange thing is the spelling. It's K-I-G-H-T on cannabis.com.
Okay, and is that predominantly for attorneys, or is that for the general public consumption?
Well, that's a good question. I write it for the sophisticated person in the industry, whether that's an attorney, whether that's a business person, or even a consumer who really wants to delve into a little bit deeper of the mostly legal issues, but also we address some business and some scientific issues as well.
Okay. And the reason we have Rod on the program is we're going to be talking about the DEA interim final rule. But Rod, I want to talk to you about a couple other things before we get to that. And I will point out to folks that Rod was gracious enough to join us this week, even though he is en route right now on a business trip. So he is in his car, and we want you to stay safe, but I do appreciate you you know, answering the questions for us and coming on the program. But Rod, tell us how, first of all, you're very well known in the cannabis industry, the hemp industry, but tell us how you got involved with both hemp and cannabis, and why you were pulled in that direction.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, I've got a longer story, but the short story is that I've always been an advocate for cannabis reform of all sorts. I also had cancer, had testicular cancer a little over a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And I used cannabis while I was going through chemotherapy treatments and was frankly blown away by how much it helped alleviate my symptoms. And that, not cancer itself, but the symptoms of chemotherapy, the mm-hmm. nausea and body aches and sleeplessness and anxiety and that type of things you have. Mm-hmm. And so that prompted me to turn from just sort of an advocate in the abstract, so to speak, to being someone who really advocated professionally. And that's, I've changed my career to do that. And it's really been fulfilling and exciting. And as this cannabis evolution just continues, you know, mm-hmm. every year there's that much more that's moving forward, and I'm excited and happy to be part of it.
Well, you know, there's folks that I've talked to that have had physical ailments that cannabis certainly helped them, as well as hemp. But some of the folks were very intimidated to get into it or do it because of the legal aspect. Again, you said this was 10 years ago. How did you get introduced to it, and how was it introduced to you in a way to relieve the pain and the other symptoms of problems you had?
Right. Sure. Well, 10 years ago, and I live in North Carolina, and I'm outing myself and certainly not for the first time. I had some illegal marijuana that I got from a friend, and it also wasn't the first time I'd ever used it. I'll say that as well. But I you know, to dig a little bit deeper into my story, I had used cannabis before, probably as we would consider now, quote unquote, recreationally, mm-hmm. Off and on throughout my young adult life. But I had read about how it could actually be very beneficial for things like nausea and pain and body aches. And if the first part of my chemotherapy, I thought, well, I'm not gonna try that. That's just a cheap excuse to catch a buzz. Mm-hmm. But as I read more and those types of symptoms, frankly, escalated in me, and I was really feeling nauseated and pain. I thought, well, I have nothing to lose, and so I tried it without a whole lot of expectation. And I think that's what really shocked me, is that the effects were pretty immediate and very dramatic, and that changed my whole mind. It was a complete and fundamental shift in my brain from, you know, for someone who was an advocate and enjoyed using it, you know, casually or adult use or recreationally, to someone who realized this really is truly medicine, and it's important that it be available.
And then from that point, you took your legal services, again being an attorney, and you focused on that industry after that.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
And at what point did hemp enter the picture?
Well, hemp entered almost by surprise. So I'm in North Carolina, and I'm starting a cannabis law firm. I think, well, how do I do this in a prohibition state? I got licensed in Oregon, and I thought, well, maybe I'm just going to be flying back and forth to Oregon a lot. But about that time, the 2014 Farm Bill came out, and it legalized for a form of cannabis, industrial hemp, for the first time in, you know, not quite 100 years, but almost 100 years. And that was really the very beginning of the CBD from hemp business that we see that's so huge and growing right now. And so I started getting calls from people to say, hey, I want to get into CBD. Is it legal? And like a lot of lawyers do, I thought, well, let me do a little research on that. And so I went out and did a little research and found that for the most part, there was nothing out there. There were no interpretations of the law. There were no discussions of it. And the little bit that was out there, I frankly thought was wrong. I thought it through, and I said, that's just not right. So I started thinking about it a lot. And that's when the blog really, I think, started to get some traction, because I started really blogging about hemp and CBD and industrial hemp. And there were a lot of issues with the DEA and the FDA and people, you know, a lot of questions about its legal status. And so that got me really, really involved. And my law practice is we represent businesses in all sectors of cannabis, whether it be marijuana or hemp. But most of our clients are in some aspect of the hemp industry for that reason.
And do you see a lot more attorneys getting into that field?
I do, and I think that's for a couple of reasons. One is that I think that it's an exciting field, and you know, setting aside the subject matter itself of cannabis, we found that you know, it's just exciting. The laws are moving so rapidly, mm-hmm. And there's so many issues that are brewing to the top. There's not any other area of law that I can think of right now, with the possible exception of maybe artificial intelligence or something, where issues are so rapid and it's so intellectually stimulating. And then secondarily, we have you know, lawyers that are, you know, very interested in cannabis itself and are advocates and want to be involved as this evolution grows. So we're seeing a lot more lawyers. And I guess a third sort of thing is that it's I think it's a little bit, you know, quote unquote, safer to get into it. You know, at the time that I got involved, I didn't know. I realized I was taking a lot of risk in getting involved in this, and there weren't a lot of lawyers doing it. Now there's sort of a bit of a path that lawyers can follow, and then build, you know, build from that path. And so I think it's a little more of a comfortable zone to be involved in.
Rod Kite is our guest. Rod is a law attorney. He deals with hemp and cannabis. And Rod, again, the reason we wanted to get you on here, give us some more in-depth insight to this DEA interim final rule. Justin Swanson keeps us up to date on this, but we wanted to dig in a little further and go to an expert here and find out if you can kind of paint a picture of what that DEA interim final rule is all about and how that affects hemp growers.
Yeah, well, first of all, Justin's doing some great work, and I always enjoy talking with Justin and emailing about these issues. With respect to the DEA final rule, so a little bit of background, you know, Congress enacted what's now the 2018 Farm Bill that broadly legalized hemp and expanded the definition from the 2014. Whenever Congress passes a law that impacts federal agencies, then those federal agencies have the authority, and again, I'm speaking very generally and broadly, have sure. the authority to issue regulations to govern their you know, how they enforce that statute. And in this situation, there are multiple federal agencies that are implicated by the hemp provisions of the Farm Bill. Certainly the USDA, and the USDA issued its interim final rule back in the fall. The FDA, and the FDA famously/notoriously has not issued final rules, and there's been a lot of speculation as to when that's going to come out and what that's going to say. But also the DEA has now issued its interim final rule, and that interim final rule addresses several issues, but two that I think are really fundamental to the hemp industry, and that I think are very damaging potentially to the hemp industry. One is that the DEA addresses hemp extract that exceeds 0.3% Delta-9 THC. And the other issue is that the DEA addresses synthetic THC. Just to start with that point, and I don't mean to just jump right in, so I'll
go right ahead.
Brief, and then, sure. But with respect to synthetic THC, is and has been since the Controlled Substances Act, you know, illegal. There's no real question or issue about that. But that begs the question as to why the DEA would issue regulations and discuss synthetic THC as it relates to an agricultural statute, specifically hemp. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's pretty clear that the DEA was actually really kind of between the lines addressing Delta 8 THC and potentially has Delta 8 THC in its targets. And I'm happy to talk about that a little bit more. But the other issue is this, what's been known as the work in progress hemp extract issue. And that is, if you take a lawful, you know, hemp plant, and you process it, almost always through that processing, and however you process it, whether it be hand trimming all the way to sophisticated types of extraction and distillation methods, at some point in that process, usually there's going to be some form of an extract that has more than 0.3% THC concentrations, mm-hmm. and certainly not as much THC that people purchase on the recreational medical market. But we're talking about, you know, 2-8%, you know, THC, and that's typically a work in progress, clearly from hemp, and the DEA contends that is that's illegal. Well, if that's the case, then most of the industry is going to be devastated, because it is that processing piece of the supply chain that actually is the node from where the inputs, the raw inputs of the hemp come in and the outputs, which are used in formulated consumer products, come out. And so you say, well, that whole group is acting illegally. Well, then you've essentially just cut the supply chain down and broken down the industry. So it's a very important issue. And again, that's the broad overview. I'm happy to address some of the details, but that's what we're looking at.
Well, now the DEA typically would be involved in the drug enforcement side of things. Shouldn't this really be a USDA? Shouldn't they be the ones involved in this? How is the DEA, and are they working with the USDA and sticking their nose in this and trying to cause this problem?
Sure. Well, I think you're exactly right. There's just a threshold matter. There's a question about why the DEA is even involved at all. You know, why is the DEA compelled to issue a rule about hemp, which has expressly been removed from the Controlled Substances Act? So that's an issue and a concern to begin with. And certainly we've heard from the USDA itself that the DEA is being fairly aggressive. And working with may not be the best description of what's going on. But, you know, I'm not privy to behind the scenes, the interactions. And so I don't want to comment on what really is going on behind the scenes. But certainly from an industry standpoint, the DEA is overreaching.
As far as commenting, has the DEA really commented on whether or not they're looking at this as an enforcement priority? How involved are they really in this?
Well, that's a good question. There was a recent article in it was either LA Weekly or LA Times, but that where a DEA spokesperson actually addressed this issue, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially said that, you know, we're aware that this is of concern to the CBD industry, and then went on to say that from an enforcement standpoint, that there are there's the opioid crisis and resources are really being directed towards that. So, you know, that certainly signals some sense of relief for the industry, but it's also one spokesperson just speaking to the media about, you know, casual enforcement priorities. There's nothing legal there or enforceable there, and certainly the DEA is not prohibited from exercising its enforcement priorities as it deems appropriate, and that's our big concern.
All right, Rod, where else can we go with this? What can folks do? Is there anything that our listeners can do to push back against the DEA on this legally?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I think the very first thing is to understand the issues. And if you are someone who has an interest in hemp, and I mean that sort of in the legal term, meaning with you use hemp products. Certainly, if you're in the industry itself, you manufacture, you process, you grow, you have brands, whatever it is. This rule is likely to impact you, and I think it's important. First of all, to comment. There is a comment period. Where you can comment on the rule. The rule, to be clear, was effective and enforceable immediately upon the time it came out. But there is a 60-day comment window, and I encourage you to make articulate comments. And with respect to your comments, and also the second thing you can do, which is reach out to lawmakers and regulators in your state and in your region from a federal standpoint, is to let them know who you are, you know, in the terms of, hey, I'm a user of hemp products, or I'm a producer of hemp products. This rule is going to negatively impact me, and here's how. And you know, I've spoken about this with other folks before. There's a real sort of, I think, human need sometimes when these things happen to just say, well, you know, to lash out a little bit in a comment and say, you know, this is wrong and don't take away my products or whatever. But really, those types of comments are not helpful. Certainly using foul language and whatnot is not persuasive.
So you're saying leaving a comment like "screw you, get off my back" is probably not going to be that effective. They might just pass by that one.
Right. Well, we can all totally understand that sentiment and they feel it. I think that's what we need are people who say, you know, personal stories. This is how this rule impacts me. Please change it. And certainly there are organizations that are national organizations, trade groups that are putting together comments now. And if you're a member of a trade organization in the hemp industry, you can reach out to them and say, are you putting together a comment? Well, if so, here's my story. Would it help for me to, you know, contribute my story to you? So we want these comments to be coordinated, not necessarily from a, you know, like a, you know, controlling what goes out, but to help such that the message is really clear and comprehensive.
And where can folks, again, where can they go to get this information to the DEA, make the comment to the DEA, or as a group?
Yeah, good question. As you mentioned, I'm in my car right now. I had to take a business trip that was a little bit unexpected, so I don't have that in front of me, but I do know that the DEA IFR, the interim final rule, has a link to the website where you can make comments. My blog, I've got two articles on the DEA's IFR, and I have a link on my blog post. And then there are other law firms and trade industry associations that also have links. And so it's fairly easy to find if you do just a little bit of Googling around.
Okay. And again, that's Kite on Cannabis, the law blog. And again, go ahead and give us the details on where they can get in more information from you and get in touch with you, Rod.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, my blog is kiteoncannabis.com, K-I-G-H-T on cannabis.com. You can reach out to me directly by my email. That's rod@cannabusiness.law. That's my email. And my phone number is 828-255-9881.
Fantastic. And of course, people can always go to the Midwest Hemp Council website to get some information as well. But we certainly invite you to go to the source there to Rod if you have questions or need more information. Rod, anything else we need to add to this conversation that I have not hit on this week?
I think you've hit the salient points, and I appreciate you reaching out to me and the opportunity to speak about this really important issue.
Well, it's been very informative, and that's why we're here. So we really do appreciate it, and we hope to get you back for some updates here soon.
Okay, well, thanks. I'm always happy to come back, and certainly stay tuned. I think there's going to be a lot of movement on this over the next several months.
There we go. All right, Rod, we appreciate it, and you stay safe in your drive.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, and that's going to do it for our podcast this week. We certainly do appreciate Rod joining us as well as Justin Swanson. The Midwest Hemp Council weekly podcast is brought to you by AgroZen Life Sciences. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council weekly podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next week, everybody. So long.